Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I am RDY, and joining me today are...
Barak Malkin.
Ethan Lane Miller.
So I put in the notes today that I wanted to talk about the book of Judges, specifically chapters 14 through 16. And I don't know if either of you read those chapters in the notes, but I know that
Barak... I did not realize there was homework for this episode.
That's okay. I know that Barak put in the notes on our note page the name of the character who is involved with these chapters, and that character is Samson. Samson is born in Judges chapter 13, and his story is told in 14 through 16. And I will say, when he's born, he is dedicated as a Nazir, a Nazirite, for his entire life, which means he's not allowed to eat any grape product, he's not allowed to drink any intoxicant, and he is not allowed to cut his hair. So those three things signify him as a Nazirite, someone who is dedicated to God. And the word Nazir, we usually just say Nazirite. It means ascetic. It's someone who is giving up certain life pleasures, you know, especially when it comes to grapes and wine, and instead dedicating themselves to service for God. That's for a temporary Nazirite. A permanent Nazirite doesn't have to be a complete ascetic, as we'll definitely see with Samson. So, in the story that is told in Judges 14 through 16, Samson's grown up. He desires a certain Philistine woman. And after a little bribing and chiding, he convinces his parents to acquire her for him. And on the way down to Timnah, a full-grown lion comes roaring at Samson, and he rips the lion in two and doesn't tell his mother and father what he's done. They go, they get married, and on his way back to Timnah to marry her, inside the lion's skeleton, because he's on the same trail, is a swarm of bees and a honeycomb, and he takes the honey and eats it as he's going along, gives some honey to his mother and father, but doesn't tell him where he got it or even how he had, you know, killed the lion a year ago. So they go to a feast. He's assigned 30 men to be his retinue, and he gives them a riddle. And he says, out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet, and they can't answer the riddle, they can't figure it out. And since he hasn't told anyone what this means, they get his wife to tell him what it means. And then they guess the answer correctly that, oh, honey coming out of a lion. And he gets angry and kills 30 people to give them the payment of the bet that he had made with them of 30 tunics. So he kills 30 Philistines. Because he's angry at these wedding guests who guessed his riddle correctly. Then he goes home, and later on he starts to miss his wife. He goes back down and he says, hey, where's my wife? And her father says, we married her off to someone else because you were gone. And Samson gets angry again, ties foxes to torches and releases them in Timnah. And, you know, so they, of course, they burn down the city, and the Philistines say, oh, who did this? It was Samson. They attack him, and he beats 1,000 of them with the jawbone of a donkey. And then they name the place, after he beats them all with the jawbone of a donkey, they name the place Hill of the Jawbone, which I think is a kind of a funny name for a place, but especially funny that, like, what it's a hill of is probably corpses. And
the jawbones would be included with that.
It's one jawbone.
No, I know, but if you said this hill of corpses, there would be jawbones in that hill of corpses.
Right, they have jawbones, yes.
Yeah.
They're not donkeys, though.
They're not, no.
They're not. Later, he goes down to Gaza, and in Gaza, he's in bed with a prostitute, and people are ready to come and attack him when he wakes up in the morning. So instead, he wakes up in the middle of the night, tears off the city gate, and marches it up a hill some hundreds of miles away, as if to say, like, you know, Mwahaha, you can't ambush me at the gate because the gate's not here. And then finally he falls in love with Delilah. All of this leads up to Delilah. And he wants to be with Delilah, and the Philistines encourage her to tell the secret of his strength. And so he lies to her a few times And then finally tells her the truth and says, if you cut my hair, I will have no strength. And so she lulls him to sleep, and she has everybody, all of her Philistine companions, come and shave his head. He's weak. He can't get away from them. They gouge his eyes out. They bring him to their temple. And they, you know, after a little time, they make him dance before them. And because his hair has started to grow out again, but he's kind of like feeling around this temple where they've brought him, Temple of Dagon, to make him dance. And he has a guide put his hands on pillars so that he can know where he is. And he prays to God, you know, give me strength one more time. And he collapses the Temple of Dagon on himself and all of the Philistine followers of Dagon. So the character of Samson, ruled by strength, ruled by his appetites, ruled by anger. What is my nerdy smash?
Wait, oh, this boy. I feel like I have a good guess, but I will say, Professor, Rabbi, I did my homework. I read these verses. I think I missed some of those pieces in the translation that I read, because I saw the thing about the riddle. I didn't see his answer. I sort of took it as a metaphor of like, I have a riddle and they can't solve it, and only I know the answer. And I never saw the answer within it. But I will also say that something I read in this reading is she says, where do you get your strength from? And he doesn't say, I get it from my hair. He says something along the lines of like, I am a Nazirite, and that is because I don't do this and I don't do that. It might be the grapes and wine, and I just misread it. Don't do this, don't do that, and I don't cut my hair. And she takes that as, we have to cut his hair because that's what makes him a Nazirite. And it wasn't a, I get my strength from it. I think that's been a translation as a way of telling the story a little bit easier. But that was something that I took away in this reading.
Which is exactly what I just did, but you are correct.
Okay.
The line is, no razor has ever touched my head because I have been a Nazirite to God since I was in my mother's womb. If my hair were cut, my strength would leave me and I should become as weak as an ordinary man. That's Judges 16, verse 17.
No, I don't think my translation had the, if my hair should be cut.
One of you had the director's cut.
Yeah, the director's cut.
The director's haircut?
Ooh. All right, I have, I think, a pretty spot-on guess, but I'm going to let Ethan take a spot-on guess.
Oh, that's great, because I have no idea.
Great.
At all.
Which Star Wars character is he talking about, Ethan?
I mean,
Who gets their power from their anger?
I mean, the obvious answer would be Vader or Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of, like, who from Star Trek maybe fits the bill, like... I don't know.
I'm going to say I feel like this is a Hulk episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What? That was in the back of my head. I was like, no, it's not the Hulk. What do you know?
It may have been too obvious, but today we are talking about the Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk first appeared in the Incredible Hulk number one, a rare superhero that's first appearance is in an eponymous title. May 1962 was the date. Created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, inspired by Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But even after that first publication, Lee and Kirby had trouble deciding exactly what would cause him to transform from Dr. Bruce Banner into the Incredible Hulk and back again. And there were lots of different plots for this misunderstood monster until 1968. When they finally settled on uncontrollable rage that would turn Dr. Banner into the Hulk. So 1962 was Incredible Hulk number one, but the idea of rage, not until 1968, which I find fascinating.
Wait, how did he change before that?
There were a lot of different things. The one that lasted the longest was he was Banner in the daytime and Hulk at night.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
And the Incredible Hulk in 1962 was gray.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was only one issue.
Yes, for the May issue.
Oh, we talked about this with Danny Fingeroth. I asked him, and he said they made a gray Hulk again in future stories as a callback situation.
Exactly.
But,
yeah. It partly callback, and partly, you know, there's a red Hulk. There are different iterations of the Hulk. There's the merged Hulk that's not too dissimilar from the Avengers Endgame Hulk, where he's kind of merged Banner and the Hulk into, like, best of both worlds. And I used to joke that, like, well, the reason that the May 1962 one was gray was because it was still in black and white. So just in case my sister Susan is listening, the story of the Incredible Hulk begins when brilliant nuclear physicist Dr. Bruce Banner saves young Rick Jones from a gamma radiation blast, and in turn is infected with gamma radiation that causes him to transform into a hideous green monster called the Hulk. At first, he transforms into the Hulk at sunset and returns to Bruce Banner at sunrise, as I mentioned. Over the years, and with the help of repeated gamma radiation treatments designed by Dr. Banner, he learns to control the transformation to a certain extent. Now, whenever Dr. Banner becomes angry, his rage triggers the transformation. He becomes the Hulk until he calms down and regains control. When in Dr. Banner form, he spends the majority of his waking hours searching for a way to free himself from the Hulk permanently. There have been lots of manifestations of the Hulk. There's a great storyline where he's alone in Alaska, and this is from about 20 years ago, maybe, and he gets like interrupted by the guy who delivers his food and supplies. You shouldn't be here alone. You got to come down and be with people. And he goes to people, and what's the first thing that happens? These guys try to start a fight with him, and he hulks out and has to run away again. And wouldn't you know it, the guy who brought him supplies works for Fury and says, hey, we want you. We've lost control of a Hydra satellite, which attacks any vessel that comes close to it. So we're going to launch you into space by yourself. And since you're organic, it won't attack you. And while that didn't end up entirely true, Hulk realizes that it wasn't a Hydra vessel. It was a SHIELD vessel and gets even madder and gets into the escape pod once he defeats the spaceship and says, I'm coming back to Earth and I'm mad at you, Fury. And Fury has programmed the pod to go the opposite direction, away from Earth. And this leads to the Planet Hulk storyline, which
is a good series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great series. So when I was a kid, we watched The Incredible Hulk on TV. And that was really my first introduction to the Hulk. I loved the show. It was Dr. David Banner because Bruce had certain implications that people's prejudices couldn't get over. And so we would watch it all the time. It was two actors. One actor played Dr. Banner and the other actor played The Incredible Hulk. And that was Lou Ferrigno, who played The Incredible Hulk. Can't remember right now the name of the actor who played David Banner.
Bill Bixby.
Bill Bixby played David Banner. Thank you so much. And it was just so much a part of my like growing up with superheroes. Do you have memories of like the Hulk, you know, reading comic books, watching movies? Where does he land for you?
I did see some of the original series as the reruns. And then I don't think I thought about him much until they attempted to make his movies a couple of times and then got introduced in those ways. But I don't think I ever had like a super strong affiliation to him. You know, I would play him sometimes in the Marvel vs. Capcom games. But aside from that, I don't think I'm attracted to him because he's so much anger and I'm so much not anger, and that I don't view that as like a superpower or something to be idolized or like, I think that's probably why I don't connect with it too much, because it's just his rage is what makes him powerful. And that's not who I am or who I want to be.
Very much not who you are. Yeah. And it is much more who I am. You know, like I feel like I get hot under the collar, and that is one of the things that you and I are very opposite from each other, where I react quickly and have all kinds of mantras I say to myself to not let it happen regularly. But yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, my connection to the Hulk really is through the MCU. I mean, I was aware of the Hulk's existence prior to the MCU, but I mean, it wasn't till the Avengers movie. You know, 'cause I didn't see any of the other Hulk films, but it wasn't really until I got into the MCU that I really began to experience the Hulk.
So you never saw like the Tim Morton Hulk or the...
No, I didn't.
Did I say Tim Horton?
Yeah.
That's a donut shop.
Yes, it is.
So you never saw the Edward Norton Hulk?
That was like, who is Tim Morton?
That was the guy with the green donuts, right?
That was the guy with the green donuts, Tim Horton.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I thought that the two independent Hulk movies were terrible, but I also thought that Ed Norton was an incredible Bruce Banner, which
he was
really
supposed to be the one in the MCU.
He was.
Yeah. So would you say he was an incredible Hulk?
He was an incredible Hulk. And I love that too much to groan at it.
I think the Eric Bana one, the first attempt at the recent Hulk ones, I liked that Edward Norton was this scrawny scientist that transformed into this big hulking mess, whereas Eric Bana felt like somebody who could handle himself well outside in a fight. And that's not who I wanted to see as a Bruce Banner. And I think that's probably one of the things that turned me away from it, is that he on his own felt too much like he would be fine in a fight. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like Eric Bana was okay. You know, I would much rather have an Incredible Hulk than an okay Hulk. It was a strange, I just think they did it too quickly. You know, like they made those movies when they had the idea, but not the technology.
Well, they made those movies because Marvel was panicking and bankrupting and they sold off all their properties and they had an obligation to make a movie every certain number of years featuring the Hulk, or else they'd lose that property contract and would go back to Marvel. And so that's why we get so many. That's why X-Men, Hulk, all the characters that haven't been in the Marvel universe that had movies pre-MCU, Spider-Man, all of them had contracts that said you had to make a movie every X number of years or else Marvel gets the property back. And so that's why Hulk. That's why we swapped Spider-Man, because they needed to get another movie out within their contract time. That's why they weren't always so great, because they had a time limit.
Now, I know that's true for Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, but the first Hulk movie, didn't the first Hulk movie end with Nick Fury or with someone, or was that?
Well, that's no. The one with Edward Norton.
The second one.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was right. So not Eric Bana, because both Iron Man and The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton came out in 2008, I want to say. Okay. And that it was Iron Man and then Incredible Hulk. And that post-credit scene makes no sense whatsoever. I don't understand why Iron Man is talking to General Ross about. I don't understand the purpose of that conversation. It doesn't make any sense to me. But they had to meet their. So that one comes in still owned by who owned Incredible Hulk?
Fox.
Was it Fox still? They owned that one too? That
was a guess.
That they had done the Eric Bana. Wasn't there two Eric Bana movies? Or is there only one? It's just one Eric Bana movie. Then that's a 5-year gap. Yeah, 2003 and then 2008, for 5 years. Yeah. So I don't know what their commitment was, but now he can be in Marvel, but he can't have his own standalone movie, which is why he is getting storylines through outside properties like Thor and She-Hulk, because he's not allowed to have his own series yet. And so I'm really curious if and when that property contract will break, because they introduced his son at the end of She-Hulk. But that's a storyline that comes because of Planet Hulk and World War Hulk that we haven't explored. And there's no way that that timeline fits within this She-Hulk. I must have been during his Thor period that while he was not transforming back and forth, but he wasn't smart enough to have a relationship during that time, it felt like.
Yeah, depending on what his form was.
I don't know what they're going
to
do.
It's complicated.
Thankfully, so not our responsibility to figure out.
Yeah. So going back to Samson for Michelle, who wants us to do more of the Jewish stuff, Samson is often associated with uncontrollable rage and great strength. And then the difference between him and the Hulk is Samson's insatiable thirst for the company of women. In fact, for Samson, women are his weakness, and it could be argued that for Hulk, women are his strength, because it is usually a woman like Betty Ross or the Black Widow who are able to calm him down, which I would say is a strength, rather than the women who try to trap Samson in the Bible. Samson doesn't usually get a lot of credit for his mental prowess. But he does have a propensity for riddles and competition and creativity that you see throughout a lot of the text. The lack of control is, I think, the key that really cinches these two characters together. Where Bruce Banner has trouble controlling his rage, Samson has trouble controlling his rage. And from Bruce Banner, it's because of gamma radiation. For Samson, it is because he is a tool used by God. In the text, whenever something amazing is done by Samson, a phrase happens right before these feats of strength or whatever it is that he does. And it is Vatitzlach Alav Ruach Adonai, which means the Spirit of God gripped him.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the very last line of Judges chapter 13, which is right before our story starts, is the Spirit of God first moved him in the encampment of Dan between Zorah and Eshtol, which means the time where he fought the lion. So it's saying, get ready for the Spirit of God to grip this guy.
So is there a connection between anger and God?
Oh, interesting. Lots of connections between anger and God. God gets angry.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I was leading, you know, I put it as a question rather than a statement, but like, yeah, God totally gets angry.
Yeah, and in fact, in the 13 attributes of God, God is described as Erech Apayim, which we translate as slow to anger. It's not a direct translation, but I won't get into that now. And that slow to anger still means God gets angry. It just takes a while.
Right. There's a lot of instances where God is angry, and so he does some things. And yet, because Moses got angry and hit the rock twice, he wasn't allowed into the land of Israel. And I like the side where, you know, we're made in the image of God. And so because he gets angry, we get angry. I get that. And yet part of me wishes it wasn't part of us. I don't know. Anger to me is a secondary emotion. Something happens first and you feel one way. And then anger to me is that follow-up emotion. You're not angry immediately. You're jealous. Surprise, you're upset. You're surprised. Yeah. You're hurt. And then comes anger. To me, anger is a secondary emotion, not a primary emotion. And so, you know, I know that the Hulk gets, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that you're making him angry. You're doing something else to him. You're annoying him. You're frustrating him, or you're getting him upset for whatever reason. And then comes anger. And so I don't love that for him. And equally, I don't love it for God or the other biblical characters, because I think it minimizes what's happening, that there's other emotions going on.
Let me react to this before Ethan derails the conversation. So the idea of anger as a secondary emotion, I love, especially in relationship to the Hulk, especially in relationship to both the Mark Ruffalo Hulk and the Ed Norton Hulk, because Ed Norton spends a lot of the movie doing breathing techniques and checking his pulse and making sure he can stay calm so as to not bring out the Hulk. And Mark Ruffalo has that great line in the first Avengers movie where he says, "You want to know my secret? I'm always angry." And then bang, he turns into the Hulk and just starts, you know, taking names and kicking butt and chewing bubble gum.
And he's all out of bubble gum.
Okay, Ethan, you had something to say.
Yeah. How do we feel about the idea that God has emotions?
I think it makes sense.
That's a great question. And I see them as metaphor. You know, we are created in the image of God, but God is ephemeral and God ain't got no body. Well, then we're nothing like God because we have bodies. We are physical stuff. So which is it? And I think that the part of us that's ephemeral, our mind, our ability to think, that's the part that's like God. And that's where our emotions come from. But I still think that it's metaphor, because we can't describe God except in language that we get. So as my professor, Dr. Leonard Kravitz, would say, if the Bible were written by plumbers, God would be a faucet. But because the Bible was written by people, God has an eye and a face and a back and a hand and emotions.
Yeah, I think I'm skeptical about a lot of stuff in religion. And the reason that I'm still religious and believe in God is because I've really connected myself to the concept of God is a figure that we cannot possibly understand. And so any type of explanation for that character, to me, is only because we are trying to understand. And so I like your idea of that they're metaphors, is that these things that we've created for us to try to figure out what life is, we give characteristics and voice and words and imagery to God and God's actions. But it's, I am watching, I'm almost finished watching The Good Place. And there's a scene where Ted Danson, who plays a demon, essentially says, oh, mind the mess. And she's like, what mess? And he's like, oh, that's right. You can't see in nine dimensions. So you forget about it. Let me just move this. Right. That's what it feels like to me of God, is that there's no possible way for us to totally comprehend. And so for me, my science brain doesn't overtake and say, well, there's no explanation for it, and therefore it doesn't exist. My science brain says, well, there's no explanation for it. And then my religious side was like, well, that makes sense, because we're not supposed to be able to understand it. And so how can we, in three dimensions and linear time, understand God fully? And I, you know, in connection to the Hulk, he's a scientist, and the Hulk repeatedly has storylines where he doesn't think God exists because he has been through so much trauma and pain. And, you know, there's times where he outlives all the other heroes and he survives because the Hulk can survive anything. But why would he be the one left to have this punishment? What is the purpose? And his science side sort of overtakes. I saw RDY shaking his head a little bit. I don't know if there are storylines that I don't know of where he does believe there's a God, but my recollection is there's a lot of his science and this unending misery. There can't possibly be a God. That's
Yeah. And very, very often science is pitted against religion, but I'm a person who likes when they work independently, but can answer the same questions. And when we can use them both as tools, I think that makes the world make sense in different ways. But the thing about Samson in particular is that he's not just beholden to his anger. It's that being gripped by Ruach Elohim, by being gripped by the Spirit of God, that really sets him apart from other characters, not other heroes in the Bible, because there are quite a few heroes in the Bible who get gripped or get moved or get, you know, filled with Ruach Adonai, Ruach Elohim, depending on which time it's being used. Ruach Elohim is Spirit of God. Ruach Adonai is Spirit of God, but because Adonai and Elohim are two ways to name God. But it says in Judges chapter 14, verse 4, that God was seeking a pretext against the Philistines who were ruling over Israel at that time. So all of the things that Samson does are because God wants him to. This is not the, you know, God fills me with spirit kind of happy clappy God that we might relate to today. This is a vengeful
happy,
God.
Happy clappy.
This is a vengeful God who's seeking to, you know, free the Israelites from under the thumb of Philistine rule. And Samson is the tool God uses to mete out that vengeance. This is also like when, I think it's in the second Hulk movie, where Ed Norton is trying to figure out how to kind of force the Hulk to come out and not hurt people that he doesn't want to hurt. And he says, I don't know if I can control the anger, but I can aim it.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Still not a fan. Like, what? Why is that the lesson? Like, there's
it's
better.
It's not the lesson.
No, I know, but there's better properties that talk about controlling and focusing your anger, right? Karate Kid does that in the original series, where he's so angry and Miyagi helps him redirect the anger and use it into the positive way. Whereas Hulk's positive way is smash and just smash things that need to be smashed. And I don't know if Samson has this similar thing that I'm frustrated with. The translation that I read, he doesn't feel angry, and he also feels a little bit head over heels in love with Delilah, because she's asking him what makes him weak, and he's not understanding that's a terrible thing to tell some. I don't know. It just felt like he was giving in too quickly, that maybe love was his weakness and anger is the Hulk's weakness.
I think anger is the way the Hulk uses his power.
Yeah.
And anger is the way Samson uses his power. And the difference is, to me, that Samson has a theology, you know, the, not Samson himself, but the story of Samson has a theology to it, whereas the Incredible Hulk does not. Mm-hmm. But I will say that it, with the Incredible Hulk, that, you know, I mentioned that he was inspired in part by Jekyll and Hyde, that idea that when he's in Bruce Banner form, his greatest weapon is his brain. And when he's in Hulk form, his greatest weapon is his muscles. And so it's that combined version that we see in Avengers Endgame and in a lot of the comic books that are, you know, 1990s and later, that you have this Hulk that can communicate with more than grunting in one-word sentences, and a Hulk who is thinking and who even occasionally thinks as deeply and as skillfully as Bruce Banner.
Yeah, I really loved the way that the MCU was able to bring us from 2008 till today of like full-on grunting gorilla Hulk from like no language. I don't think he had it. Did he say anything in the first movie, in the first Avengers movie? Did the Hulk ever say words that weren't like, oh, puny god? He said his puny god, yes, in the first movie. And that's like it.
And Captain America is the one who says Hulk smash.
Yeah, as his order, right? And so
yeah,
they take him from this all pure muscle, all rage, to this point of like intelligent, two very different characters. And his arc has been really beautifully done for a character that I don't enjoy too much as a superhero. They did a really nice job of weaving this character's arc through so many different stories really nicely. And I'm a little anxious about, as I said, a little anxious about his son coming into the storyline without us having met his wife or his time off on the other planet, but maybe that was a spinoff of what happened to the Thor movie that we'll get in some future property. But yeah, I'm a little nervous.
Brock, just so you're aware, a person does not have to have a wife to have a child that they're taking care of.
No, that's true. But in the storyline, he does. And that's the whole reason for World War Hulk.
You know, I was giving you a hard time.
Yes. Yeah.
And because, you know, I'm sure we have listeners who went, what? The big thing for me is less the anger and the anger issues and more the being gripped by God for Samson. Relating him to the Hulk is that kind of grunting and using the muscle as the way to get the point across is how both of them are. But for Samson, he's doing exactly what God wants him to do all the way to the end. And when he is killing Philistines and killing worshipers of Dagon and, you know, bringing the world down around him, it's all because God wanted him to. And it says twice that he led Israel. So he led Israel for 20 years as one of these judges. So Samson is a leader. Samson is some sort of, you know, chieftain that we call a judge. And these stories that come out of Samson acting alone can't be his whole story, because we know we have these moments where he's ruling over Israel for 20 years. And the thing that these stories all have in common are Samson's encounters with women. So where anger might be seen as a weakness for Bruce Banner, women are a weakness for Samson. And, you know, you mentioned, like, why would he tell Delilah a fourth time what it is that makes his strength go away, when every time he's told her a lie, she's tried to do it.
Yeah. That did not make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. He does it. He's not thinking because he cannot think in front of Delilah.
And it was Robin Williams who said, God gifted men with two heads and only enough blood to run one at a time.
That is totally Robin Williams. The thing about the Samson story is that it's all just to get rid of the Philistines. All of the ways that he's illustrated, the weakness with women, the ability to use his muscles as his main weapon, these are all because God wanted it to happen. And at the end of the Samson story, when he tears down the temple by pushing on the pillars, the Bible says, those who were slain by him as he died outnumbered those who had been slain by him while he lived. And it's written in such a way that it sounds like that's a good thing, which is disturbing. And the one thing that I will say about that feat of strength is that's the only time where he is not gripped by Ruach Adonai. All the other times he does an amazing feat of strength, it says that, you know, the Spirit of God gripped him. But on that last moment, he calls out to God, give me the strength. He prays, Sovereign God, remember me and give me the strength just this once to take revenge of the Philistines. And does God grant his prayer or does he do this on his own? It's not clear because this act of being like, for lack of a better term, the world's first suicide bomber.
Oh, is there not a better term for that?
I know, right?
Is the martyr?
I don't know that he's a martyr because he kills himself. It's a tough sell to make this a nice story. It is not a nice story, not in today's mindset.
No, very different than like the childhood books that I read when I was reading through these two chapters for homework as a good student, Ethan.
Hey, shout out to Spurtus. I have a lot of homework to do right now.
The one thing that gives me comfort in this is that both with Samson and the Incredible Hulk, we have a hero designed on a flaw. That something that is seen as, rightfully so, seen as a negative, anger. It is the thing that makes these two powerful. And I would even say it borders on righteous anger, depending on the storyline.
Well, I'm sure we'll do this in another episode, but I would say it's a good example of your greatest strength is your greatest weakness.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like both of them sort of have that tie into it.
And when it comes to the Hulk and Banner, like they spend a lot of time trying to get rid of each other.
Yeah.
And we've both said that our favorite version of the Hulk is when they're together, when they're working together.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm only approaching this from an MCU standpoint, but like culminates in Smart Hulk.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, were there instances in the comics where Banner succeeded in removing radiation from him? Didn't Doc Samson help him with that at one point, or did that not actually finalize? Like, did some stay in his system and it multiplied again sort of thing? I don't remember if he ever separated the units.
I feel like not in anything that I read, but it does seem to me to be the kind of thing where like, if they ever got it to work, you'd be like, oh no, I need it again because the city needs me. And so he would go back to it.
My kid has a good book where Spider-Man and the Hulk are merged together by accident. And so instead of splicing separately the Hulk out, Hulk and Spider-Man combine as one person, which I guess is three people. But in, you know, for kids' books, it's two people.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then they separate Spider-Man and the Hulk at the end. But spoiler alert.
You mentioned Doc Samson, and that was the character I wanted to point out as well for the Incredible Hulk. Doc Samson is one of the Hulk villains, usually, sometimes teammate partner, but Doc Samson, Dr. Leo Skvorsky, was a psychiatrist who experiments with gamma radiation, and his hair is irradiated. So, of course, he loses power when his hair is cut because he's Doc Samson. Much more direct relationship to our biblical character. But I would say perhaps even put into the Hulk comic books because the Incredible Hulk is so much like the biblical Samson that they just had to say, oh, yeah, and here's Doc Samson. Are you familiar with that character too, Barack?
Just from the animated, wherever he shows up in the animated series for, you know, Earth Mightiest Heroes, or he shows up a couple of times in the animated shows. And those are the only instances that I really am familiar with him for.
Okay. So one of Samson's big things is that he's trying to cure the Hulk kind of against his will, whereas Bruce Banner is trying to cure himself.
Got it.
Doc Samson sees the Hulk as infected or diseased, whatever, and is trying to cure him. And, you know, often does so by trying to get his own powers. And a lot of the Hulk's powers, when it comes to She-Hulk, which we mentioned as well, I think one of my favorite explanations of dealing with anger was in the She-Hulk series, where he's trying to get her to calm down so that she can control her anger. And she says, no, I can pop in and out of this because all women do is control our anger.
Right. Yeah. That was, yeah. It was very interesting. I don't think that happened in the comics, how they ever explained Jen's ability to be that sort of centered. And if they did, I have not read that. So I apologize.
Same. But man, what also like a great insight into, you know, the differences between how men handle their anger and how women are forced to handle their anger. Cool.
Do we have any out of the not great options? Do we have a favorite Hulk or Bruce Banner or David Banner?
I mean, look, I'm limited to the MCU and what I've got there. I don't know what I don't know in this situation.
Wait, so which from the MCU? Well, granted, the other ones aren't technically from the MCU, but. So you're choosing Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the others to compare to, but I think he's delightful.
Yeah.
I think he's delightful in general, in addition to being delightful as the Hulk.
Yes and yes.
He shares a birthday with my youngest son.
Yeah,
and Scarlett Johansson. I think I would agree with you that I think Edward Norton was my favorite Bruce Banner. Mark Ruffalo has been my favorite Hulk. I think probably just because he was able to explore the character a lot more than anybody else.
I would say more specifically I think one of my favorite Hulks is the Hulk from Planet Hulk. And so I think in the MCU, my favorite iteration of Hulk was the one in Thor Ragnarok, just because having that like speaking, but still brutish Hulk and out in this gladiatorial far off in space world reminded me so much of Planet Hulk that it just, you know, tugged at a heartstring. Well, thanks you guys for exploring the Incredible Hulk via Samson. And I would just say that in closing, I think it is important for us to be able to use what we might see as our greatest weakness as having the potential for great strength. And I hope that we're all able to turn those things into positives with or without God's help.
Amen.
Yes.
That'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And as a nerd who cooks, don't make me hungry. You won't like me when I'm hungry.
Tonight on a very special episode of Torah Smash.
You can read like this.
We don't know what's going to happen till we get there.